This is Digital Story Podcast number 988, February 25th, 2025. Today's theme is, But I'm Not a Wedding Photographer. I'm Derek Story. Would you ask a podiatrist to examine your eyes? Probably not. Yet shy landscape photographers are routinely asked to shoot weddings. And what's even more delightful is that they often say yes. So how do they not only survive this commitment, but thrive? Find out on this week's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Most of the time, you don't even see it coming. You're sitting around the table with friends or family, having a bite to eat and exchanging stories. Then it lands. Sarah and I are getting married in April, and we were wondering if you could shoot our wedding. You like them both. You're thrilled for their upcoming nuptials. And after a short pause, you mindlessly say, yes. Then you begin to evaluate what you've just done. First of all, you're not a wedding photographer. Second, you may have done weddings in the past, but that was a long time ago. And third, even if you have, you sold all that wedding gear and bought stuff for the photography that you really like, which is most likely landscapes. What to do now? First, take a breath, then begin to build a simple game plan and figure out how to use the gear you already have. I was recently that photographer who said yes, and now I'm preparing for an April wedding. Here's how. All right, so that's the introduction to an article I just published on LiveView called The Accidental Wedding Photographer. I'll make sure I have a link to it in the show notes. But it goes into all the detail that I'm going to talk about today in terms of the steps to take before the wedding, how to repurpose the gear that you already have, and come out of this thing with a pretty good shot, a little bit wiser, and maybe hopefully thinking twice before you say yes again to such an assignment. But for those of you who are already in this pickle, let's march forward, alrighty? It's that time of year, right? It's right, people are getting married in the spring, they're getting married in the summer, they're looking for photographers. They know that you're a photographer. Doesn't make any difference what kind of photographer you are. You're a photographer. That's all they need to know. Okay, so let's go over to some of the steps here. I'm going to go over to my article. These are my show notes so that I remember what to say. So you are going to attack this situation on two fronts. The first front is a building a strategy with the bride and groom. This is very important. And then the second front is getting your gear in order with the goal of not buying any more gear than you absolutely have to. I know that this could be an excuse to buy a new lens, but I urge you to resist that temptation unless you would otherwise use that lens for your everyday photography purposes. Okay, so let's see how far we can go without adding to our inventory of camera equipment. Okay, so let's talk about building the strategy with the bride and groom. This is a very important part of the thing. And in a lot of ways, I think this is even more important than what you end up bringing to the event with your camera equipment. You're going to need three things up front to get the ball rolling. The first thing is you have to build a shot list with the bride and groom. What images do you just have to have? And I really do sort of present it that way. I don't say, hey, let's brainstorm on all the pictures that you might want for your wedding. Don't do that. Don't do that. You'll end up with a list that's a mile long, and then they'll hate you after the wedding because You know, it's torturous to sit through a million group shots. I mean, at some point, human beings can only grin so long. And then, you know, the whole thing just starts to fall apart. The muscles start to spasm, all that kind of stuff. So don't put it out that way. Say, you know, what images do you absolutely have to have? I would like to know those. And begin to build a shot list. Now, I send them an email up front that has, you know, these questions in it. And then I ask them to send me back the information. And what I do with the shot list, I look for redundancy, what they send back to me. Look, if you've got Uncle Bob appearing in 9 group shots, there's a problem. Uncle Bob should be in 1, maybe 2 shots, and then that's it. Everything else is candids. All right, I'm talking about the torturous group shots that happen after the ceremony and before you get to start drinking those. Okay, so you want to really narrow all that down. And this is where you take the information that they give you and you consolidate it and you make it workable, because you know that they don't want to be tortured on the day of their nuptials. They want to have fun and you want to get them to the fun as soon as possible. And that means moving through the shots that they may have asked for. Okay, so you start with a shot list. Now, the second thing that you need is a schedule. You need to know when things are going to happen on the wedding day, because what you're looking for are openings in the schedule to put some shots in there. Because at least my goal as a photographer, any event, whether it's a wedding or something else, is not to disrupt the flow of the event itself. I want to be a natural part of the event. I don't want to be frowned upon by the caterer who's delaying all the guests and letting the food get cold. I don't want to be that person. I want to be the person that's very surgical in their approach to getting the pictures that the bride and groom want without messing everything else up. So you need to have a schedule so you can figure out, okay, we can do a set of family group shots here right before the reception. Maybe we can do another little set here, and then everything else is candidates, you know, something like that. So you need to have the schedule to know when that's going to happen. Now, the third thing that you need, and I fondly call this the sheepdog, maybe mainly just to myself and to you, but in my mind, this is a sheepdog. And who is going to help corral the people for the group shots? Because you don't want it to be you. You have your hands full already thinking about photography things, like how do I make sure these shots look good? So how do I find the spot where they're going to look good? All that kind of stuff. You don't want to be wandering around and going, hey, have you seen Ted? I don't know what Ted looks like, but we need him for a shot because I got everyone else standing over here except for Ted, and Ted's supposed to be in the shot. You do not want that scenario. Everything grinds to a halt. So what you need is the bride and groom to identify someone, first of all, who knows who the heck Ted is, and second of all, has the kind of personality to go, hey, Ted, can we borrow you for a second? Put down that glass of champagne, and I promise we'll get you back to it. Just come over here for a minute. Let's do this quick shot, and then you can get on with having fun over the course of the evening. So you need someone that I fondly call the sheepdog to help corral those people. Now, this person needs to have the shot list. They need to have the schedule, and you need to have a conversation or two with this person before the actual wedding day. I like to have a phone call a week or two ahead of time. And then when I first get there on wedding day, I like to find this person and just compare notes for a minute and just make sure we're on the same page. So those are the three things that you need strategically to get going as soon as possible: the shot list, the event schedule, and the sheepdog. Very important, all three of them. And in the article, I actually have a sample email that I send out, you know, asking for these things and, you know, getting that ball rolling, which I've already done with my April wedding, right? The one that I've been asked to do. And I've already gotten a response. So I haven't gotten the details yet, but I got an acknowledgement that this is a good idea, and I'll take that. We'll get the details here soon enough. All right, let's go over to equipment now. You know, so you have all of the preliminary planning en route, but now you need to start thinking about your equipment, and you need to start thinking about it earlier than you may normally think, because you have some testing to do once you figure out what you're going to be using. Now, in my case, I don't have all my wedding gear from the past. I don't shoot weddings anymore. So I'm piecemealing some stuff together. And it might not be what normal wedding photographers use. And normal wedding photographers listening to this podcast may go, "You are plumb loco, buddy." But that makes no difference to me. I'm using what I got. So let me tell you what I am going to use and why I'm choosing it. So I decided to go with my Nikons for this wedding that's coming up in April. And I'll tell you why. First of all, the ZF has excellent low light performance, and I really want that. I also want the few extra megapixels that it has, the 24 point whatever megapixels, just to give me a little bit more elbow room for cropping. And then I do want to have as soft a background as I can get for a lot of the shots. So I'm kind of leaning towards it, but there's another reason why, and this reason might surprise you, because for a wedding, you need at least two of everything. You need two cameras, two flashes, you know, two of everything, and then a minimum of two lenses. I'm planning on five for this wedding, and I'll tell you what they are in a few minutes. So the other camera that I'm going to be using, and one of the reasons why I went with the Nikon, is I'm going to use the Nikon D610 DSLR. Now, you might find this fascinating, because I know a lot of photographers these days think that DSLRs are dead. Well, they are not dead. A lot of us still like them. That doesn't mean we don't like mirrorless. In my case, I love mirrorless cameras. But I'll give you an instance where the DSLR for me is essential for this assignment. And this is why I'm going with the Nikon, because I have a mirrorless body and a DSLR body that share the same lenses, albeit with an adapter going from the F mount to the Z mount, and they share the same batteries, which is also super important for these kinds of events. But the other thing that the D610 has is an optical viewfinder. And I have found that optical viewfinders are very helpful when you're doing flash photography with flashes that aren't dedicated. In other words, you don't have Nikon's iIntelligent ITTL connectivity, because I'm not using a Nikon flash, and I'm not gonna buy an expensive Nikon flash to do a wedding I'm not getting paid for. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, because I probably won't use the flash most of the other time. The flashes I wanna use, or the first flash I'm gonna talk about anyway, I've talked about in the past, which is the Godox Lux Senior Bare Bulb Flash. This flash is so cool, and I cannot wait to use it for the reception, right? I've used it for all sorts of other things, family gatherings and portraits and so forth, but I'm just envisioning it for the reception. And the way that I like to use this flash, you know, it has a bare bulb, and then it has the reflector. Now, the reflector collapses, right? So you can either have the reflector all fanned out, and then you get more of a directional light, but you can also collapse the reflector. So you literally just have a bare bulb for the flash illumination. And when you're shooting in a reception hall or something, this bare bulb kind of throws light all over the place. It's not as directed at the people that are in front of you. And you get this sort of cool, what I call Ouija effect, Ouija the photographer. You get this sort of cool Ouija effect that I think is really nice for late reception candids, which are very different than things earlier in the day at the wedding itself. Now, the situation with the Lux Senior is that it isn't a dedicated flash. In other words, it's got one little contact So when you press the shutter button, then the flash goes off, but the flash and the camera are not talking to each other at all. Then I have to go into on my camera, and I'm using the D610, and this is probably beginning to become clear to you why. I have to go into manual exposure mode. You know, basically what I do is I put the flash in auto mode, you know, and has its own little auto sensor. And that auto mode works out to be at ISO 400, f5.6, and then I choose a 30th of a second because I like to capture as much ambient lighting as I can. Well, if I take my mirrorless camera, my ZF, and I go into a darkened hall, ISO 400, a 30th of a second, f5.6, and I look through that electronic viewfinder, I'm not going to see a whole lot. I'm going to see darkness. Now, I know one of my Olympus cameras has an optical viewfinder setting, and I don't like it that much. It's okay because it's emulating an optical viewfinder. It's not really an optical viewfinder. Now, the D610 has an optical viewfinder that's 100% and is really nice, which means then I can set the exposure to whatever I want, and I still see the same thing through the viewfinder. The camera doesn't know that I'm going to add flash. It just thinks I'm underexposing the heck out of the scene because the flash and the camera, they're not talking to each other. They're not dedicated. In this case, having an optical viewfinder is really nice for me. And I love it. I love the way the optical viewfinder looks with the D610. I love that it shares the battery, the same battery with the ZF. I love it has two card slots. And when all else fails, it has a pop-up flash itself, which I can either use in an emergency as a fill flash, or I can use it with the Lux Senior because the Lux Senior is also a slave flash. So if I wanted to do something fancy pants, I could using the pop-up flash on the D610 and then the Lux Senior as the auxiliary wireless flash. So that's just one example of why I think DSLRs and optical viewfinders still have a place in this world for specific situations. And then, you know, talk about a really nice backup camera. It's a really nice backup camera, right? I'm going to use the ZF during the day for the ceremony and all the daylight stuff. But I'll probably be using the D610 more at night when I'm playing around with these weird exposures and using fill light because I have the optical viewfinder for it. Another thing that I'm doing that no wedding photographer would ever do, let's go to the ZF now. I'm going to use that 28 to 400 millimeter zoom on the ZF. I am. I'm telling you. And I know there isn't a wedding photographer on the planet that would even consider this. I think it's going to be great. The ceremony is outside during the day. Now, it's going to be in a redwood grove, so the light should be fairly decent. I'm adding a flash, and this is the one thing I had to buy for the wedding, which was a newer Z1 TTL round head flash. I got it on Amazon, and I have a link to it in the show notes. I got it for $139, and it's powerful. It does dedicated flash photography with the ZF. It has a round head, which is good for, you know, people shots, portraits and such. It has a modeling light with 10 different settings on it. So I could just use a modeling light for, you know, certain kind of low light shots with a wide aperture lens. And again, $139, which is my total investment for this project. So during the day, I'm going to use the 28 to 400. I'll have the newer Z1 round head speed light, and I'm going to shoot everything with that. I'm going to adjust the flash. I like to tone down the flash so that you use it outside and it provides a little fill light, but you don't really notice that it's a flash shot. When you do it right, when you ratchet down the flash exposure compensation, separate setting, flash exposure compensation to like -2/3 or -1, it produces a very natural looking shot. So I'll be using that during the day. Now, the other lenses that I'm bringing, so I've got the 28 to 400Z, Then I'm bringing two wide aperture lenses for the Z. I'm going to bring the 26mm f2.8, and I'm going to bring the 40mm f2. And those will be fun to play with, possibly at the reception, doing existing light work, having those prime lenses. For the D610, I'm going to go with the 24 to 85 f3.5 to 4.5 f-mount G-series lens. It's a really terrific zoom lens, and it'll work great for practically anything that I need. And then I'm going to bring along also, and I'm debating between the Voigtlander 40mm f2 for the prime lens or the Nikon G 50mm f1.8. Part of me feels like I should bring the Nikon 50mm f1.8 because I've already got the 40mm Z for the ZF. And that 50mm could be nice just to have that little extra focal length. And then I'm bringing the FTZ2 adapter, so I'll be able to use all five lenses on the ZF. And then, of course, two of the F-mount lenses, the 24 to 85. And this is saying I'm going to bring the 50mm f1.8 F-mount lenses. I'll be able to use those on the D610. So it's a pretty light kit, and I'm traveling with a very light bag that's going to have that. I'll have the two flashes, two camera bodies, and then, of course, extra batteries and memory cards. And that's it. that's all I'm going to do. Now, way back when, back in the old days, when we had to rub sticks together, I brought a lot more equipment when I was doing wedding jobs. But then I was, quote unquote, a wedding photographer. Now I suffer under no such pretense at all. And I am kind of looking forward to seeing what the Lux bare bulb flash can do in that wedding environment. I've done testing already. One of the key things that I'm doing is, first of all, when you do this thing like I'm talking about with the D610, where you're using manual exposure settings with a flash that doesn't talk to the camera, first thing you gotta do is remember to turn off auto ISO. Turn it off, or it'll just screw everything up. So you lock down your ISO. In my case, I like 400. Do your manual settings and then add the flash, the bare bulb flash in my case. You can add any flash. And part of the joy of this podcast is whatever you have laying around in a sock drawer, hopefully you can repurpose it using some of these tips. You don't have to go out and buy something new. I'm going to use that setup. And you know, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And then I'll do the TTL work during the day. Now, the key is to practice, right? You got to practice with this stuff. I did a practice yesterday with the Lux, the bare bulb, on the D610. And I thought I had everything dialed in really nice. And the exposure looked good, but the color was not good. The color was not good at all. I was sort of torn on, I'm still trying to figure out what to do. I was running a film simulation that I don't think was very good with the Lux, and everything was too blue. And boy, you know, you get those bluish skin tones. Oof, woof. But I don't want it to be too warm either. So I'm still playing around with the color. And then when I do get the color dialed in with that flash, then, you know, that'll be my custom user setting too. That'll be part of it. So the white balance will change also, along with everything else, when I go to that flash setting. So these are the things you need to play with, you need to test. And for, honestly, for the next month or so, this will be the camera kit that I try to use as often as possible to get in as much of a groove as possible, so I have a head of steam when I go to that wedding. Let me read you the last part of the article. All of this builds confidence for wedding day. You'll be comfortable with your gear, have a solid rapport with the bride and groom, and will know the type of images they want you to capture. And if you're really lucky, you might even be able to enjoy a few minutes at the buffet. I'm not a wedding photographer, and you probably aren't either, but we both can survive this commitment by piecing together existing gear and building a game plan. Prepare and practice. And one last piece of advice. The next time someone asks you to shoot their wedding, think twice before you answer. The Sigma BF stands for Beautiful Foolishness. And this is an article on Petapixel written by Jaron Schneider. For those of you that haven't seen the news, Sigma announced a new full-frame camera called the BF. And it is a very unusual camera, to say the least. It's basically a block of aluminum, minimal dials, basically plain. No electronic viewfinder, a fixed back LCD. It doesn't even have a removable memory card. They just put memory in it, and you use the memory that's in it, which means then you have to have the camera connected somehow to the computer to offload pictures. I mean, this thing is really crazy. But I was wondering what the BF stands for. This article explains it. Let me read you what Petapixel has to say. Speaking to Petapixel, after the launch of the new camera and two new lenses, Sigma's CEO shared the origins of the new camera's name, Beautiful Foolishness. The new camera bucks multiple trends that have guided camera design since the day of film photography. The compact 24.6 megapixel full-frame interchangeable lens camera is controlled by a wholly reimagined user interface and just three buttons, a dial, and a shutter release. The company says it is the first in the world to make a camera with a true unibody design that is carved from a single block of aluminum. The process takes 7 hours. It lacks a hot shoe, electronic viewfinder, and a majority of the buttons and controls that enthusiast photographers are used to, and it doesn't even have a memory card slot. It instead comes with built-in memory that is accessed via USB-C. All of those are bold, polarizing choices, but the camera's name seems to indicate how the CEO and Sigma as a whole view the camera and hope others will see it. BF stands for Beautiful Foolishness, he says. This is a phrase taken from the book, the very old book, I think, probably over 100 years old, called The Book of Tea by a Japanese researcher. At the time, he wanted to tell the spirit of the Japanese culture, and we have tea ceremony. And through the tea ceremony, he tried to tell what is the essence of Japanese culture. In the book, he says, let's enjoy the time and beautiful foolishness with a cup of tea. So this camera is for daily use. Daily life is full of joy and nice relaxing time, which he calls beautiful foolishness. Sigma designed the camera with the intention of making it as easy as possible to use without feeling constrained to older design elements that are, Sigma argues, not necessary and overly complicated. I hope this camera will have a kind of timeless value, he adds. The Sigma BF is coming in April and will be available in either black or silver for $1,999. Very interesting. So, on kind of a side note to this, when I was in the preliminary meetings for the OM System OM3 camera, I was very impressed with it. And, you know, that's far more a camera to my liking than the Sigma BF, which is, I mean, it's just too pared down for me. I need so many things it doesn't have. I appreciate what they're doing, but it's just not for me. But what I thought was interesting is that this camera is going to sell for $1,999. And when OM System told me that the price of the OM3 was going to be the same price, $1,999, I said, I love this camera. I'm concerned that the price might be a little high. Knowing that the marketplace can get some very nice full-frame cameras and APS-C cameras for about the same price. Olympus has stuck with that price. OM System has stuck with that price. And now as I'm seeing the pricing of other things, including the Sigma BF, I'm going, well, maybe just like everything else, the price of cameras has gone up. And that $1,999 for the OM3 to me looks a lot more appealing than the $1,999 for the Sigma BF. That's just my style of shooting. But I thought that was an interesting side note. If people ask, what does BF stand for? Now you know. Okay, I have a few things that I want to mention quickly for Virtual Camera Club news. The first is that we have the iPhone and Compact Camera Photography Online Workshop coming up on March 6, 2025. You can still sign up if you want to join this. This is going to be fun. We're going to talk about iPhone photography. We're going to talk about mobile processing. And we're going to talk about integrating your favorite interchangeable lens camera or fixed mount lens camera with mobile processing and the iPhone. And by the way, I did order the Leica Grip. for the iPhone. I've got to try this thing. So hopefully it will get here in time. It hasn't shipped yet. I don't think they're shipping it yet, but I'm hoping that'll be here in time for the March 6th workshop, or at least sometime during the workshop. And then the other thing to note is I have the new OM3 coming on loan, and I'm pretty sure I will have that before March 6th. With any luck at all during this workshop, in addition to working with the iPhone and everything else that we're going to be working with, I'll have the OM3, and I'm hoping that I'll have the Leica iPhone grip, which is a MagSafe grip, and it just looks pretty cool. Use it with the Leica Lux app. Anyway, if you want to sign up for this workshop, which is going to be a lot of fun, regardless of which equipment you use, remember the whole idea of this is to show you a bunch of different techniques and help you devise a workflow that works with the equipment that you have, right? So that's the whole deal. You can go to thenimblephotographer.com, sign up there. There's a link in the show notes here to sign up. And our first session is on March 6th. If you love this kind of photography, as I do, I hope to see you there. We have started our My TDS Moment recordings. We had a bunch of them last Friday. I've got bookings lined up for the next couple weeks. This is fun. I'm telling you right now, this 1,000th podcast celebration is going to be a blast. Just based on the first few interviews I've done or the first few testimonies that have been shared, it's going to be a blast. If you want to be a part of this, if you want to join us, if you want to become part of the celebration of the 1,000th podcast, I have a link to the meeting calendar in the show notes. We're doing a half an hour Zoom sessions on Fridays. You can sign up for one of those. You know, think about what you want to say. If you're doing a testimonial, if you want to do a mini interview, and I'm talking about just 2-3 minutes long, let me know about that. But whatever, you know, whichever one you want to do, let me know. Sign up on the meeting calendar, and then you can become part of this whole thing that we're doing. This is going to be a fabulous show, and I can't wait to do it. The link to the meeting calendar is in the show notes. Do not delay. People are filling up those slots. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the people that support this podcast month in and month out. And some of the Inner Circle members have already signed up to do a TDS moment. And that's really fun because many of them have been with us for quite a while. And I love hearing their perspective, talking about their favorite shows, talking about their favorite moments as part of the digital story. It's really interesting. This is a great group of people, and if nothing else, you would just enjoy hanging out with them on our online site, our Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online. If you're interested in becoming a part of this, all you have to do is go to any page of the digital story, click on the Patreon tile that's there. You can sign up, and then you'll be hearing from me. You'll get an invite to the Inner Circle space, and you'll also be eligible for discounts for all the workshops, including the upcoming mobile photography workshop. Yeah, you know, you can save yourself some money and be an Inner Circle member all at the same time. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the digital story. These are the folks that have stood by our audience and provided us with all the tools that we need for excellent inkjet printing photography. This is the kind of stuff that lasts. This is the kind of stuff that is device independent. And, you know, you're not going to print something that isn't really nice, that you're not really proud of. So let's just say that nothing is left behind except for your prints on Red River paper. Isn't that a legacy that would show you in a beautiful light, right? Forget about all the outtakes and everything else that's on disk. All that's gone. All you have is a stack of prints made on Red River paper. That's a very appealing thought. If you're interested in getting your inkjet print mojo going, then all you have to do is click on the Red River paper tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Take you to our landing page. That's where our discount code is for free shipping. You can nose around a bit and you can start your inkjet printing project. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more fun stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.